the outcome of Tuesday's presidential election in the U.S. remains in limbo, as Democratic candidate Joe Biden maintains his lead over Donald Trump in key states. Iran's president says those behind the sanctions against Tehran should have learned a lesson, calling on the next U.S. administration to return to its obligations. The Lebanese president calls on the U.S. to offer its documents for imposing sanctions on the leader of Lebanon's biggest Christian political bloc, Gebran Bassil. And welcome from Tehran. You've tuned into World News. I'm Marcia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. First story takes us to the United States, where Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden has once again addressed the nation as his lead grows in several battleground states in the race for the White House.
We're going to win this race. Just look at what has happened since yesterday. 24 hours, we were behind in Georgia. Now we're ahead, and we're going to win that state. 24 hours ago, we were behind in Pennsylvania, and we are going to win Pennsylvania. And now we're ahead, but we're winning in Arizona, winning in Nevada. In fact, our lead just doubled in Nevada.
Biden called on the American people to be patient and wait for all the ballots to be counted. He stressed that the purpose of American politics should be solving problems and not fanning the flames of conflict. The former vice president was speaking from his hometown state of Delaware. That is while the campaign of incumbent President Donald Trump has filed lawsuits to challenge the vote counts and results in several states. Trump supporters have also held rallies outside ballot counting centers in different cities demanding a recount. Now, protesters reiterated Trump's allegation that Democrats have rigged the vote. In Arizona, some of Trump's supporters were seen carrying firearms. In Pennsylvania, demonstrators called for the disqualification of delayed mail-in ballots, but the state's apex court rejected their claims. Trump himself has vowed to continue fighting, saying he has no plans to concede. The tensions grow as the vote counting is ongoing in several swing states where a record number of people cast their mail-in ballots. U.S. incumbent President Donald Trump reportedly has no intention of conceding defeat in the 2020 presidential election. Several unnamed sources told the Wall Street Journal that Trump is determined to take his election fight with Democratic candidate Joe Biden to the courts. Sources say Trump has been ignoring the advice from some campaign advisors to prepare for a possible election loss. They say the aides have advised the president that lawsuits are unlikely to wipe out Democratic nominee Joe Biden's leads in states such as Pennsylvania, Nevada, and Georgia. They say Trump has remained defiant and his legal team is preparing to mount legal challenges in several battleground states over claims of voter fraud. Well, the U.S. presidential election is in a dead heat, with Biden slightly ahead in four key states. But the story of the U.S. election is not so much about who wins or loses. The system itself has come under intense scrutiny as to why the Electoral College is deciding the deciding factor rather than the popular vote.
U.S. President Donald Trump is on the path to lose one of the most controversial presidential elections in modern U.S. history. Without providing any evidence, Trump has claimed that the election was stolen from him by his Democratic opponents.
And we think we will win the election very easily. We think there's going to be a lot of litigation because we have so much evidence, so much proof, and it's going to end up perhaps at the highest court in the land. We'll see. But we think there'll be a lot of litigation because we can't have an election stolen like this.
The president sees a prolonged legal battle in courts as his only option for securing a second term in office. Trump has cast doubt on the integrity of the U.S. election system. The bone of contention was hundreds of thousands of mail-in ballots that turned the tide against him in Georgia and Pennsylvania. The president had previously falsely claimed victory in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Georgia, and Michigan, even though mail-in ballots were still being counted.
Well, I mean, it has repercussions only for his base because, you know, since the remarks and what he's saying is doesn't have any kind of evidence, the people who support him, and then those, not just the people who support him, because there are people who support him that also don't believe in these remarks, but those that will be incited to go and be at the stations and trying to clamor to get in and militias and those types, it will incite them.
Meanwhile, Republicans have become divided over Trump's rhetoric. Senator Mitt Romney said counting every vote is at the heart of democracy. Republican Representative for Illinois, Adam Kinzinger, said that Trump should stop spreading debunked misinformation. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan said that there is no defense for Trump's post-election comments. That is while two other Republican senators have supported the president. Ted Cruz said that Pennsylvania's attorney general had ordered vote counting to continue in Philadelphia until Joe Biden wins. Lindsey Graham also said that Philadelphia elections are crooked.
Democracy depends upon fair elections. President Trump's team is going to have a chance to make a case regarding voting irregularities. They deserve a chance to make that case. I'm going to stand with President Trump. If a Democrat were doing this, it'd be cheered on. We're not going to let the media intimidate us into exploring whether or not these contests were fairly had.
The U.S. political system has two main parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, and the majority of Americans vote for one of these parties. But there are independent and third parties also, like the Libertarian and Green parties. Unfortunately, they are not given a chance to gain media coverage like the other two main parties. Then there is the Electoral College system, which has been criticized for not being fair in deciding the winners since it overrides the popular vote. But this election is treading dangerous territory since the sitting president, Donald Trump, is crying foul and fraud without providing evidence to such claims. It is ironic that the U.S. has called elections in other countries not fair or free.
A network of right-wing political activists have launched a nationwide campaign to mobilize Trump's supporters to rally in the streets. There have also been calls to protest as the president's path to a second term dwindled. Trump supporters appear to be refusing to accept the prospect of the president losing the election.
We also just can't have corrupt elections left and right. The 11th hour change done by the Democratic Party and the mainstream media, that is basically just a wing of the Democratic Party, has got to stop.
A group of GOP operatives and influencers have been amplifying president's claims of widespread voter fraud. One organizing effort featured a Facebook group called Stop the Steal. It has already garnered more than 360,000 members.
I think this is not even the first election, but U.S. is not really democratic. And so people have to understand that the popular vote is not even what's going to decide the presidency. And then so much, even other offices, electoral offices, are all based on their being able to get the support of corporations and the capitalist class to support them.
Trump backers ramped up protests against an election that they believe was being stolen from the president. They clashed with counter-protesters as vote counting continued in the remaining states.
I think after this is over, that probably also will kind of subside. It doesn't mean that their types of actions, the most extreme of the white supremacists, because the whole country is white supremacist. People need to understand that U.S. is founded based on white supremacy and capitalism and patriarchy. And they're just the most extreme face of it. But once that subsides, they're still going to be, you know, feeling threatened.
Trump seems intent on waging a prolonged legal battle, viewing it as his only option to remain in office. He has personally dispatched legal advisors to several swing states where the margins are tight. It is believed that Donald Trump has changed the Republican Party, and even if he loses this election, he isn't going anywhere. He and his followers are a huge political force in America, and many believe a conservative agenda is still popular in the U.S.
Iran's president has called for the return of the next U.S. administration to its obligations under international law. Hassan Rouhani says Iranians have well resisted U.S. sanctions and economic terrorism over the past 3 years. Rouhani said those behind the sanctions must have learned a lesson. He said they should have come to know that they have been wrong and this will never give them what they sought. The current U.S. president withdrew his country from the Iran nuclear deal back in 2018. Since then, Donald Trump has imposed sanctions under his so-called maximum pressure campaign to choke Iran's economy. The U.S. also unsuccessfully tried to extend the U.N. arms embargo against Iran, which expired last month. Lebanon's president has called on the U.S. to offer its evidence and documents for imposing sanctions on prominent Christian politician Gebran Vassil, who is also the president's son-in-law. Michel Aoun asked the country's caretaker foreign minister to obtain the data and to submit them to Lebanon's judiciary to, quote, take the necessary legal measures. The U.S. has blacklisted the leader of Lebanon's biggest Christian political bloc over alleged corruption and ties to the Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah. Washington deems Hezbollah a terrorist group. Hezbollah has condemned the blacklisting as blatant and gross interference in the country's internal affairs. Basio says the U.S. sanctions will not intimidate him or force him to turn his back on Lebanese people. Moving on to other news now this hour, turning to the situation with the coronavirus as the pandemic surges across Europe, with several countries reporting new record highs in the number of infections and deaths. Austria posted a record high number of more than 8,400 infections. The country also reported nearly 30 deaths. In Poland, the health ministry reported a record number of nearly 28,000 cases, bringing the total number of infections to over 500,000. Hungary registered over 5,300 infection cases and a record high of 107 daily deaths. The Czech Republic has posted more than 11,500 coronavirus cases. Now that takes the total number of infections there to more than 403,000. The country also said the daily deaths rose by nearly 200 to more than 4,300 in total. Meanwhile, protests against the government's handling of the pandemic crisis have continued in Italy. Angered taxi drivers have staged two protests in Rome, calling on authorities to support their sector with subsidies. Max Civilli brings us more from Rome.
On Friday, taxi drivers went on a one-day strike nationwide, calling the government's attention to the economic plight they're facing following the pandemic crisis and the connected restrictions. Unions also called two protests held in front of the economy and transport ministries, attended by thousands of taxi drivers from across the country. Drivers are demanding more support from the government as, quote, they don't have the money to pay the monthly costs of the vehicles, nor to provide for their families.
The subsidies we have received from the government so far are totally inadequate. €275 each month is not sufficient. How are we supposed to put food on the table for our families? Consider we have suffered losses in the range of 80 to 90%.
My income has dropped by 80%, but all expenses have remained unvaried. Insurance fees, fuel and car disinfection costs have not been reduced. Furthermore, the government is doing nothing to stop illegal cabs from going around.
A new three-tier restriction system came into force on Friday. As a result, four Italian regions, namely Calabria, Lombardy, Piedmont and Val d'Aosta, have been placed in soft lockdowns. The government has also imposed a nationwide curfew from 10 p.m. until 5 a.m., requiring all museums and galleries to shut down and all shopping centers to close on weekends.
Protests against the new anti-COVID restrictions imposed by the government have been staged in a number of cities across Italy. Some demonstrations turned violent as protesters vented their frustration and anger over how the pandemic crisis has been handled.
The virus is a moving train. Today it is necessary to slow it down, otherwise the train will knock us down. We are hopeful that these measures will be limited to several weeks.
The new restrictions imposed by the Italian government apply for about 4 weeks until December 3. Max Civili, Rome.
And now to Iran, which has reported another single-day record for coronavirus infections. Health Ministry spokeswoman Seema Saadat-Lahri said more than 9,400 people contracted the disease during the past 24 hours, bringing the total number of cases to over 673,000. The country also reported 423 new fatalities during the same period. That takes the total number of deaths to almost 38,000. The number of deaths and infections have been on the rise in Iran. The country has reported several new highs since September. Officials have implemented restrictive measures, including a ban on travel in and out of 5 major cities.
Lock Tehran down, or the coronavirus pandemic would spiral out of control. This is a demand made by Tehran's city council, as well as some MPs, amid an unabated surge in infections and fatalities. As the coronavirus has resurged over the past month across Iran, experts have raised the alarm over the soaring figures, especially the densely populated capital.
Currently, there are over 32,000 hospitalized COVID patients. Out of this figure, 6,800 are in critical conditions and kept in ICUs. Our medical system has for the past 9 months been under severe pressure. Our medical workers are tirelessly working to fight the virus.
Last week, the government doubled down on its COVID restrictions, banning and imposing fines on unnecessary intercity travels. The government has also extended remote work for civil servants and mandated mask wearing, fining those who go out without a face mask.
The government is not doing enough to contain the virus. It keeps advising people to stay home while ignoring the fact that those people need to work to handle their family's expenses. The government should provide taxi drivers and others like us with handouts enough for a month-long expenditure. This way, we can afford staying home.
Some people seem to be still unaware of the gravity of the crisis. The law enforcement should take strict measures to stop them from roaming around in parks and other public places. As long as apathetic citizens are not facing punishment, the virus is here to stay.
Over the past 2 months, coronavirus fatalities in Iran have more than quadrupled, with the latest figures hovering about 400. Since the outbreak of the virus in the country, plus 660,000 have tested positive, and more than 37,000 have lost their lives. The health ministry says it has proposed a 2-week enforced lockdown in the capital as the last shot in bringing the soaring numbers to a halt.
As the resurging virus continues to claim more lives, experts say it's still too soon to pin hope on a treatment or a vaccine. They say prevention is still the only weapon against the virus, on the condition that everyone is armed with that weapon. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
And with that, that brings us to the end of this World News Edition. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
the limelight.
In his Wednesday evening, 4th of November address, an increasingly desperate President Donald Trump continued his assault on the democratic process by lying about widespread voter fraud. If you count the legal votes, I easily win. If you count the illegal votes, they can try to steal the election from us, Trump told the nation. But it's now clear that some in his party aren't buying it. Almost immediately, current and former Republican elected officials blasted the president for sowing discord and lying about the ballot counting process. While some senior GOP figures parrot the president's cries of foul, several current and former elected GOP officials are speaking out. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Tom Perkins. The piece is titled, Donald Trump's baseless vote fraud claim opens cracks in Republican ranks. Stay with us for more of Tom Perkins's article. In his Wednesday evening, 4th of November address, an increasingly desperate President Donald Trump continued his assault on the democratic process by lying about widespread voter fraud. If you count the legal votes, I easily win. If you count the illegal votes, they can try to steal the election from us, Trump told the nation. But it's now clear that some within his own Republican Party aren't buying it. Almost immediately, current and former elected Republican officials blasted the president for sowing discord and lying about the ballot counting process. While some GOP figures parrot the president's cries of foul, several current and former elected GOP officials are speaking out. The Illinois Congressman Adam Kinzinger tweeted that the president's lying is getting insane and pleaded with his party to stop spreading debunked misinformation. Meanwhile, the Texas Congressman Will Hurd tweeted, every American should have his or her vote counted. A sitting president undermining our political process and questioning the legality of the voices of countless Americans without evidence is not only dangerous and wrong, it undermines the very foundation of this nation was built upon, he wrote. A clear division line is emerging in the Republican ranks. While sycophants like the South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham and the House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy have continued to parrot the president's false claims, many are breaking with Donald Trump. That includes the revered Republican strategist Karl Rove, who on Wednesday morning said, the mass fraud that Donald Trump is alleging isn't going to happen in America. Some hanky-panky always goes on, and there are already reports of poll watchers in Philadelphia not being allowed to do their jobs, Karl Rove said. But stealing hundreds of thousands of votes would require a conspiracy on the scale of a James Bond movie. That isn't going to happen. Let's repeat that. That isn't going to happen. While Republican rebukes of the president are refreshing for many Democrats, it only comes as Donald Trump's re-election campaign appears doomed. Joe Biden took the lead in Georgia just hours after the Wednesday address, and the Democratic challenger is on pace to flip Pennsylvania. As the president concluded his speech, former Representative Carlos Curbelo called for Republicans to stand up for our democracy at this hour. The former House Representative Carlos Curbelo tweeted, by illegal votes, it seems the President of the United States is referring to votes cast by mail. which disproportionately benefited his opponent this election. Those votes are not in any way illegal. Important for all public leaders, especially Republicans, to stand up for our democracy at this hour. Still in Michigan, Donald Trump's supporters, alleging fraud on Thursday, 5th of November, marched outside Detroit's TCF Center, where ballots were counted the day before. Meanwhile, the Trump acolyte and Senate candidate John James is refusing to concede in his apparent loss to Senator Gary Peters, and is demanding an investigation. But as Republicans baselessly claim fraud publicly, at least one GOP official involved in the ballot counting process has said behind closed doors that voter fraud isn't an issue. Stuart Foster, a top state Republican official who trained ballot challengers in Michigan, told trainees just days ahead of the election that he was confident with our election system. Stuart Foster can be heard making the comments in a recording of the training session. "I'll get myself into trouble here. I basically made the comment like, so if fraud was so prevalent, then did the Democrats forget to do it in 2016? They just forgot to do it," he said. "I mean, Trump barely won, and it's not because he didn't win. Democrats just didn't show up. Did they just forget? Fraud was so prevalent, but they just forgot to do it." Other Republicans in the state are now publicly breaking with the administration. Congressman Paul Mitchell insisted that every vote should be counted. "Anything less harms the integrity of our elections and is dangerous for our democracy," Congressman Paul Mitchell said. Meanwhile, two men armed with handguns were arrested on Thursday, 5th of November, near the convention center in Philadelphia, where the counting vote count could decide the presidential election, according to Philadelphia police. Joshua Macias, 42-year-old, and Antonio LaMotta, a 61-year-old, traveled to the city from Virginia Beach, Virginia. They did not have permits to carry the weapons in Pennsylvania, according to police. They were arrested after the FBI in Virginia relayed a tip about their plans to Philadelphia police. Police officers stopped the men on the street about a block away from the vehicle, according to Philadelphia Police Commissioner Danielle Outlaw.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
In the name of the one who loves us more than we love him, in the name of Allah, the subtle, the most generous. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to another program for a better life here on IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Sayyid Wahid Alawi. In the previous program, I talked about lowering our expectations as scholars and non-scholars, and we should not expect people to serve us, we should serve mankind, as the example of the noble prophet and all prophets prior to him, and the example of the imams alayhim assalam. So we should greet people. Just like the prophet said, there are three things that I would not leave as long as I am alive. What are those three things? One of them is greeting the people before they greet me. So the prophets used to greet people before they actually could greet him. He would say assalamu alaikum even to the children prior to them being able to answer back. So no one would have superiority of the prophet in saying salam, the peace greeting, than the prophet himself. He would say salam first. The second and third things are sitting on the ground and not walking in front of others. The prophet was so humbled that he used to not walk in front of others. Lust and anger must be in accordance to one's intellect and divine decree. What do I mean with that? We said that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, with his perfect wisdom, gave man two powers. What were those two powers? Lust and anger. If these two powers are in balance with the third power, which is the intellect, man will be successful. He will achieve bliss and felicity in this world and the next world. Man will reach perfection if these two powers are used in the middle course, the course accepted by both the intellect and the divine decrees given to us by the prophets. Man will fall if he acts in excess. He will leave the human world and enter the animal world. According to the Quran, he will be even lower than the animals. What about physical and spiritual benefits found in food? Let's talk about that a little bit. Eating is a very important dimension in human life. And if a religion does not talk about food ethics, then that religion should not be taken seriously. We know that Musa alayhi salam followed food ethics. We know that Isa al-Masih alayhi salam followed a specific food ethics. Even though Christians today do not follow it, Isa al-Masih followed it according to the Torah and the Bible. And so does Islam. Islam has food ethics, rules for it. It has rules for it. And one of them is that eating too little is when all of the necessary food products do not reach one's body. A person who eats too little does not benefit from the good things that Allah created for him. Thus, Islam recommends us to eat to a certain level where we are full but not completely full. And we should not eat when we are full, because that would give us diseases. A person who eats too little does not benefit from the good things that Allah created for him.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
One must benefit from food both materially and spiritually. When one eats halal food provided with halal money, that is something that we usually forget. we have in the West, for example, Muslims who work in shops that I cannot even mention here on the radio. And on Fridays, they go to Salatul Jum'ah. There are all those immoral shops are closed. We have Muslims who work in bars. They are bartenders. They are even, na'udhu billah, may Allah protect us. They are even owners of those bars with alcoholic beverages. And on Fridays, they close down the bars and go. That is the best scenario, that they close down the bars on a Friday and go for Salatul Jum'ah. Or they continue working and they do not even think about closing or going to a Friday Jum'ah. They continue working, and with that haram money, they go and buy halal food. They go and buy halal meat. Brothers and sisters, that is not acceptable. Those kind of employments, those kind of occupations, those kind of jobs are not acceptable. We have to change our job, make a tawbah, repent to Allah, and earn halal money. Only then, and only then, are we able to eat halal food. That is called halal food, when we earn the money from halal ways. And when one eats halal food, it will both strengthen his body and strengthen his soul. What I mean with halal food could also be organic food, where you have treated that animal with kindness. That animal has been an animal, has lived as an animal, has had its spacious place. A cow is actually living as a cow. A cow has its spacious place to move, to go around. A chicken, for example, has its spacious place. It's not living in a cage, an A4 cage, with other chickens. That is not humane. That is inhuman behavior to those animals. And that meat will affect us and affect our souls. So try to eat organic food, which is halal organic. And that will strengthen our body and strengthen our soul. The reason for this is that there is a little bit of Allah's perfection in the food. Man must eat sweet fruit and pay attention to who created the fruit. He should think about the power and wisdom. He must have had to make these fruits from water and dirt. He should thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and increase his love of him. One should benefit from the delicious food that Allah has made. So one has lost both physically and spiritually if he or she does not benefit from food. So till next time, dear brothers and sisters, think about this aspect. Eat halal food, earned from halal money, and try to make it organic, even if it is a little bit more expensive, but that will suit you at the end of the day, because you will not poison your body with unhealthy meat or food. Till next time, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon all of you.
Your mercy, your love is all I need.
Love is all I need.
All I need. All I need,
love is all I need.
All I need,
love is all I need.
Oh, 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 oh,
oh. Your love is all I need to be all I need. And I know that you see how much you need.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Nearly a year into the global coronavirus pandemic, scientists, doctors, and patients are beginning to unlock a puzzling phenomena. For many patients, including young ones who never required hospitalization, COVID-19 had a devastating second act. Many are dealing with symptoms weeks or even months after they were expected to recover, often with puzzling new complications that can affect the entire body. Complications such as severe fatigue, cognitive issues and memory lapses, digestive problems, erratic heart rates, headaches, dizziness, fluctuating blood pressure, and even hair loss. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Wall Street Journal journalists Sarah Toy, Samathi Reddy, and Daniela Hernandez. The piece is titled, Doctors Begin to Crack COVID's Mysterious Long-Term Effects. Stay with us for more of Sarah Toy, Samathi Reddy, and Daniela Hernandez's article. Nearly a year into the global coronavirus pandemic, scientists, doctors, and patients are beginning to unlock a puzzling phenomena. For many patients, including young ones who never required hospitalization, COVID-19 had a devastating second act. Many are dealing with symptoms weeks or even months after they were expected to recover, often with puzzling new complications that can affect the entire body. Complications such as severe fatigue, cognitive issues and memory lapses, digestive problems, erratic heartbeat, headaches, dizziness, fluctuating blood pressure, and even hair loss. What is surprising to doctors is that many such cases involve people whose original cases weren't the most serious, undermining the assumption that patients with mild COVID-19 recover within 2 weeks. Doctors call the condition post-acute COVID or chronic COVID, and sufferers often refer to themselves as long haulers or long COVID patients. Usually, the patients with bad disease are most likely to have persistent symptoms, but COVID doesn't work like that, said Tricia Greenhalgh, professor of primary care at University of Oxford in England and the lead author of an August BMJ study that was among the first to define chronic COVID patients as those with symptoms lasting more than 12 weeks and spanning multiple organ systems. For many such patients, Greenhalgh says, the disease itself is not that bad, but symptoms like memory lapses and rapid heart rate sometimes persist for months. In October, the National Institutes of Health added a description of such cases to its COVID-19 treatment guidelines, saying doctors were reporting COVID-19-related long-term symptoms and disabilities in people with milder illness. You don't realize how lucky you are with your health until you don't have it, said Elizabeth Moore, a 43-year-old lawyer and mother of three in Valparaiso, Indiana. Pre-COVID-19, she was an avid skier and did workout several times a week. Since falling ill in March, she has been struggling with symptoms including memory problems and gastrointestinal issues. She has lost nearly 30 pounds in weight. Estimates about the percentage of COVID-19 patients who experience long-haul symptoms range widely. A recent survey of more than 4,000 COVID-19 patients found that about 10% of those aged between 18 and 49 still struggled with symptoms 4 weeks after becoming sick. That 4.5% of all ages had symptoms for more than 8 weeks, and 2.3% had symptoms for more than 12 weeks. The study, which hasn't yet been peer-reviewed, was performed using an app created by the health science company Zoe in cooperation with King's College, University of London and Massachusetts General Hospital. Another preliminary study looking mostly at non-hospitalized COVID patients found that about 25% still had at least one symptom after 90 days. A European study found about one-third of 1,837 non-hospitalized patients reported being dependent on a caregiver about 3 months after symptoms started. With more than 46 million cases worldwide, even the lower estimates would translate into millions of people living with long-term, sometimes disabling conditions, increasing the urgency to study this patient population, researchers said. What they find could have implications for how clinicians define recovery and what therapies they prescribe, doctors said. Doctors say anxiety caused by social isolation and uncertainty surrounding the pandemic may exacerbate symptoms, though that isn't likely the primary cause. Other viral outbreaks, including the original SARS, MERS, Ebola, H1N1, and the Spanish flu, have been associated with long-term symptoms. Scientists reported that some patients experience fatigue, sleep problems, and joint and muscle pain long after their bodies clear the virus, according to a recent review chronicling the long-term effects of viral infections. What differentiates COVID-19 is the far-reaching nature of its effects. Whilst it starts in the lungs, it often affects many other parts of the body, including the heart, the kidneys, and the digestive and nervous systems, according to doctors. I haven't really seen any other illness that affects so many different organ systems in as many different ways as COVID does, said Zijian Chen, a medical doctor from Mount Sinai Health System Center for Post-COVID Care. He described colleagues who were energetic, but after getting sick, had trouble getting through the day. He said he has seen up close how COVID-19 still affects their ability to do the things that they love. We thought it was a virus that once it does what it does, you recover and you go back to normal, he said. Sometimes that isn't the case, and that is really scary, he said. A leading explanation for long COVID symptoms is that immune system activity and ensuing inflammation continue to affect organs or the nervous system even after the virus is gone, according to researchers. Some of the most compelling evidence for the inflammation theory comes from COVID-19 patients with signs of heart inflammation and injury months after the illness. One study looking at 100 COVID-19 patients 2 months after getting sick found that 78 had abnormal findings on cardiac magnetic resonance imaging, while 60 had cardiac magnetic resonance imaging indicating heart muscle inflammation. The study included hospitalized, non-hospitalized, and asymptomatic patients. Even those who had no symptoms at all and were young and fit, even in those patients we saw abnormalities, said Ike Nagel, one of the lead authors and director of the Institute for Experimental and Translational Cardiovascular Imaging at the University Hospital Frankfurt in Germany. Some patients had scarring on their heart imaging, he said, which worried him. The scarring wasn't too serious, he said, but we know from other studies that this is related to worse outcomes. Doctors also reporting cases of long COVID patients with gastrointestinal issues. Recent work has found the new coronavirus, known as SARS-CoV-2, in fecal matter and intestinal lining of some COVID-19 patients, suggesting the virus can infect and damage the cells of the gut. The intestines have a high density of ACE2 receptors, a type of protein on the surface of cells which SARS-CoV-2 uses to infiltrate cells.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 41 meters 7300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and IranSat or BAT 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Oh Lord, here I am, please. Your door, send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear listeners, welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. One of the, you know, misdeeds or bad traits that we as individuals have at times, because of our, you know, self-pride, because of our, you know, the takabbur that we have, or this, you know, self-loathing, if you would like to call it, you know, I am the most important person in the room, is that when we see somebody, we do not initiate the greeting. We wait for that person to greet us first. So, no, he must greet me first. Why must I greet him first? This is a bad trait to have. And yes, a lot of us have been, or may have been, you know, guilty of such a thing. That we wait for other people to greet us so that, you know, we say, oh, I'm more important than him. He knows his place now. You know, things like that. It doesn't matter if you're an elderly person or a young person or a teacher or a student, especially being a Muslim. One of the things that we learn is that the Holy Prophet always greeted first, and there's no one better than the Holy Prophet, my dear brothers and sisters. There is no creation that will ever reach the level of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And yet he always greeted first. Even when people tried to greet him first, he beat them to it. And then we see in this tradition, a very beautiful tradition from the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, where he says that the believer, again, it's another trait and characteristic of a believer, that the believer initiates the greeting of peace. And this greeting of peace is a universal greeting, that you are praying for that person. So here the Holy Prophet is saying that the believer initiates the greeting of peace, the greeting of salam, assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, for example. Whereas the hypocrite says, and this is something that we need to be careful of, my dear brothers and sisters, that we say we are believers, we are Muslims, but then we act like a hypocrite. And the hypocrite says that not until it is said to me first. That I will wait for that person to greet me because he's younger than me, he's smaller than me, he's poorer than me, he has less of a social status than me. This is all something that is, you know, not important. And we do these things, why? So that we can show that we are better. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to remove this nifaq and hypocrisy from us if we have it, and to increase our belief, inshaAllah, if we have that, and to make us of those who practice upon the tradition and the teaching of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, inshaAllah. Until next time, assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no
debate.
Welcome to the debate, and my name is Gisum Shahmadi. U.S. Democratic presidential hopeful Joe Biden has reached what appears to be a crucial point in the race to the White House, taking the lead in key states where vote counting is still underway.